This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 205.
We are here. This has been a crazy Gen Con weekend.
Yeah.
It's been super weird.
Yes.
And I have a super old fact about the number 205 for you.
You do, and I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, so it turns out patent number US-205A was granted in 1837. It was granted to a man named Ethan Andrews, a name I, of course, like, from Boston, Massachusetts.
All right.
Very close to us. And it is a patent related to new and useful improvements in the construction of stoves.
Stove radiators.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So it deals with heat transference and efficiency and things like that. But that is your fun fact about the number 205, the U.S. patent, US-205A, relates to stoves.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, this is the Family Gamers Podcast. I am your host, Anitra, and I am joined by my wonderful husband, Andrew.
I'm not lovely? I mean, that's me? I am so confused. All right, well, I'm not lovely. She is, but
thanks.
That's me. This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Did you know that risk when it comes to investing is anything happening other than what is expected? So when that stock you bought went up more than you thought it would, that was risk at work with the return deviating from the mean. Now, let's do a small sample experiment. Nietzsche, if I offered you a wager on a coin flip where on heads you lose 100 and on tails you gain 150, would you take the wager?
Probably not.
Most people don't like the wager. Their quick internal math makes the potential loss of $100 bigger than the potential gain of $150. Or they could be falling for the sunk cost fallacy, which we talked about last week, that the money they already have is worth more than the money that they don't have. Either way, this shows how most people are loss averse, not risk averse.
The amount of loss aversion you have should influence how you invest and how much insurance you own, and even how much money you have in your emergency fund.
There isn't necessarily a right answer to this. It's different for everyone.
Knowing more about ourselves and how we instinctively react will help us make better financial decisions in the future.
And knowing those tendencies in yourself might make you a better board gamer too.
It might. Mm-hmm.
If you want to talk to someone about your natural money instinct, reach out to First Move Financial by going to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to schedule a time to talk.
And if you want to think about how that might make you a better gamer, keep listening. Maybe we'll talk about it.
Thank you so much to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. So, okay, I have to kind of apologize. Last week, I said we weren't going to have a Gen Con interview show. Guess what?
Lo and behold, we have a Gen Con interview
show. Surprise! Yeah, we didn't really think that we were going to be doing the Gen Con interview thing, and then we had some opportunities come up, and we reached out to some of our friends in the industry, and we put together 4 interviews for you for the second half of the show.
I think these interviews are all really cool,
mm-hmm.
But I have to say, Gen Con online was not really what I was expecting. Not necessarily in a bad way or a good way, but I kind of feel like I had all of the stress and excitement of a con without any of the endorphin rush or the being able to at some point turn off and chill out. For the last 3 days, I've just been like always in the back of my mind, like if I'm not working on a Gen Con thing, I'm thinking about the next Gen Con thing I need to work on. In addition to, you know, grocery shopping and kids' baseball games and everything else.
Boring
parent stuff.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And you know what? We actually explore that a little bit with each of the people that we talk to in these interviews, kind of a little bit of what they're encountering with this whole Gen Con experience. And I think that in some ways, it's really making a lot of us who grow weary of cons appreciate what real physical cons do for us as people in this industry.
Yes. I think personally, given my experience with Gen Con online, I'm actually going to be more wary of online cons in the future because just personally for me, the amount of energy I'm expending isn't really worth it for what I'm getting out of it. But that's not true for everybody. So we're going to get into those interviews in the later part of the show. But first, let's take a couple minutes to talk about what we've been playing.
Absolutely. Yeah, we actually have been playing a fair amount of stuff. We've really been trying to get some things to the table. We have been getting a couple of things in because it is Gen Con season. And we really wanted to make sure that we tried out a whole bunch of stuff.
So I've been playing a whole assortment of games, mostly suggested by children and less suggested by me, which includes some super-powered Smash Masters with Asher, and also several more sessions of Claire's prototype cake-stacking game.
Yeah, I think we had some breakthroughs yesterday when we played. We were talking about some potential new mechanics, and I think some of those were really exciting.
I am just always glad to play this game because it's a fun game, and I take my role as playtester to simply play the game, continually lose and not know why, and make a few suggestions here and there of, you know, does this make sense and what can you work through? So getting some fresh eyes on it also helped Claire to start thinking through some new ideas.
I mean, I think so. And for sure, it's a fine game. Like, if we got this game in for review, we would play it and we would say, this game is fine.
Yeah.
But this game's also in development. Right. So I think that's an acceptable place for it to be right now. But I just love the fact that she's excited about it, that she keeps coming back to it, that she tries new things, that she adjusts some stuff. I do think it probably needed some kind of a mechanic adjustment to really turn it on its head, to allow it to move forward instead of just a lot of small tweaks right now. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing what she does. I mean, she does have that limitation of 18 cards, so there's all sorts of kinds of mechanics that she can't really add to this because she would need a bunch of extra cards to do it.
Right,
so
which would turn it into a different kind of game.
I mean, I think so. You know, this is a game about building cakes with your cards, and so if you're going to make this a game that can scale to, like, 5 players, then you've got to figure out a way to allow players to only have 3 cards.
Yeah.
And that's tough. So I'm hopeful that some of the stuff we talked about yesterday will come into the game and we'll see some cool stuff happen. I don't know. I have no idea.
We'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a journey of discovery.
It sure is. But you and I sat down and played a couple of games last Monday, both of which I liked.
So one was the Pop-Tarts game.
It was the Pop-Tarts game. And one of our interviews, the second half of the show, is with Jess from Funko. This is a Funko game.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit more about it then. But yeah. It was fun.
It was fun, and we actually played it again today.
Yeah.
So that says something.
Yeah.
We're going to bring it on our vacation coming up and hopefully play with your dad, who's a little bit less of a gamer.
Yeah, and we'll see how it goes.
Yep, absolutely. We also played a game that we definitely should not play with your dad, which is Seven Wonders Duel.
Yeah, so I think for our family, Seven Wonders Duel is probably going to make more sense to stay on our shelf than Seven Wonders, now that we've tried them both. Seven Wonders, you and I have played on Board Game Arena.
Mm-hmm.
Seven Wonders Duel is the 2-player version, because playing the original Seven Wonders, you really need at least 3 people.
I mean, it's a drafting game, so you kind of need to have that variance. It was really interesting to see what they did with Seven Wonders Duel to make it a 2-player game. I do understand why some people say that they think it's a better game than Seven Wonders. I don't think it could have ever existed before Seven Wonders.
Well, and it feels very much like Seven Wonders. So I like that it's taking those mechanics and tightening them all up. And their concept towards drafting for 2 players is really cool. You make a sort of tableau of some face-up cards and some face-down cards. And as you pull cards off the tableau, you flip over ones that are now accessible and can begin to see what they are.
And I like that in the 3 rounds of the game, those tableaus are set up completely differently. So they reveal cards in different ways. It just was kind of a neat little twist to the game.
It definitely was.
And you won.
You know, that's always nice too. We also played some Last Defense.
Yeah. So we had heard about this game last week or the week before, but we hadn't gotten it in yet. But I was so excited when this showed up at our door. Last Defense is a real-time cooperative game where all of the first responders, those people that you normally play as in these kinds of games, like paramedics and heroes and doctors and scientists and all this stuff, they're all busy.
Or otherwise indisposed.
Right. And so you, as random people.
Barbecue Dad.
I've played as Barbecue Dad every time we've played this game so far.
And Good Dog.
Mm-hmm.
And Tired Nurse.
Yeah, stuff like that. Anyway, so you play as these characters and you are moving around on a board trying to beat off the alien attackers.
Aliens, sentient plants, some kind of gooey, blobby
thing. Tentacles.
Tentacles.
Yeah. Typical stuff for this kind of world disaster kind of game. But it is a 20-minute real-time game with an iPad app that gives you instructions as you go along. We played this with the kids, so our 6-year-old and our 9-year-old. First time, and it was great, except for the fact that our 6-year-old kept getting distracted by the iPad.
Yeah.
Which probably surprises literally nobody listening to this right now.
Nobody with children under 15. Yeah.
But great game. Lots of fun. Very simple. We played it even on the experience mode with some adults, and we were able to beat it pretty handily.
But it still felt like an accomplishment when we did.
Yeah, it did. It did. And I definitely think this is a fun game for kids.
Yes.
So we will probably be reviewing this one in the not-too-distant future, I suspect. So that is Last Defense, another game from Funko.
We also got in another play of Endangered.
We did, and we won! We saved the Sea Otters!
We saved the Sea Otters. Hooray! Successfully!
So the first time we ever played Endangered, we saved the Sea Otters, and it was super easy, but that's because we got the rules wrong.
Yeah, that's why it was easy.
And then we tried to save the Tigers, and we failed.
Yeah.
Then we tried to save the Sea Otters.
And we did. And we succeeded.
We succeeded in saving the Sea Otters. So that was awesome. It was a lot of fun. Definitely felt like you're on the edge of your seat when those votes are coming in.
Yeah. Even though with the Sea Otters, we ended up getting 5 positive votes and all you actually need is 4. So we felt super good about that.
Yeah, we did. I really, really like how the game balances the number of players that are playing with where it positions the voting years on the calendar.
Yeah, well, you end up with about the same length of game, regardless of the number of players.
Right, and I think that is a really good thing.
I agree.
You don't end up with this ridiculous slog. Although, I went first, and then everybody else went. This is the beginning of the game. And then in the second round, I went last. And with 4 players, that's a long time to
sit
around.
You sat there for 6 turns, waiting for a turn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, roll less poorly next time. I don't know.
Well, no, it wasn't even that. Actually, I rolled fine, which is why there was no incentive to get my dice off the board.
This is true.
So, that's my very, very mature intake.
You are so mature.
Yeah. So, anyway, do you have anything else on your list?
Well, I think it's worth mentioning that we played Wavelength with Chris Goodlett, the charity board gamer, and a whole bunch of other Board Game Land friends.
Yes, that was
on
a lot of fun.
Thursday night.
Mm-hmm. We sure did. I got scolded for talking too much.
Yes. But we had a great time.
We really did. And we'll be back for more Thursday game nights with the Charity Board Gamer. Look up the Charity Board Gamer on Facebook. Every Thursday night, he hosts a virtual game of something, and you are invited to play along.
And if, unlike us, you are available before 8 p.m. Eastern, he also interviews some sort of board game personality about all sorts of things before the game.
That's right. Speaking of that, we are going to be on the Charity Board Gamers live stream interview thing on August 13th.
Yeah, so in about a week and a half.
Yes. And this basically marks our announcement of the charity event that we're going to be doing.
Do you want to tease it at all right now?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. All right,
go for it.
So we are working with an organization in Massachusetts called One Mission. One Mission is a group that supports pediatric cancer patients. I mean, that's really a pretty awful situation to go through. Cancer in general just stinks.
Always.
Yeah. And One Mission specifically deals with pediatric cancer. And the biggest fundraiser that they do every year is the One Mission Buzz Off at Gillette Stadium. This is a partnership that they have with the New England Patriots. They get a whole bunch of players together and other sports personalities and regular people in the Patriots organization and all sorts of people who volunteer to get their heads shaved. And they shave their heads and raise money for charity. By doing that, people donate, whatever. Well, obviously, with COVID, they couldn't do that this year. And so they did a virtual event, and it went so well that they're doing a second virtual event. Now, those of you who can read the tea leaves know where this is probably going. Anitra is shaving her head. No, I'm kidding. I am shaving my head.
Andrew is shaving his head for charity.
I am. Actually, that's not technically true.
I am shaving Andrew's head for charity.
My kids are shaving my head for charity.
Fair enough.
And we are going to live stream the whole thing. And we have a text number where you can text Family Gamers AA, which is our handle, of course, to that number. And we'll share that when we get closer. And you can donate that way. The first $50 donated is going to get matched by us.
And matched again by Donnie from First Move Financial.
That's right. So every dollar becomes $3 up to the first $50. But our goal is to raise $250 for One Mission. That's our goal. And so I'm hoping that first $150 is going to be easy.
Yeah.
That next $100 might be a little bit more difficult, but stay tuned. We're going to keep talking about it. We're going to talk about it on the Charity Board Gamers stream on the 13th. The actual buzz off is the 20th.
So not
it is
too
the
far
Thursday
away.
After that. Right. So yeah, that's that. I hope that you are interested in supporting us as we try to help kids with cancer.
Well, that's it. We'll put a little bit of information about One Mission and how you can donate in the show notes for today's podcast, and you will be hearing from us again.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll hear from us next week talking about it, and then the week after, just another reminder that it's going to be coming up.
Well, I think that's about it for now. So why don't we take a break and then give you all what you really came for, our Gen Con interviews.
The ones that we didn't know we were doing last week.
Yay!
All right. All right, so we're here with T from Haba. Say hi, T.
Hello. Or sorry, hi. I messed up already.
Oh my gosh. Can't take you anywhere. Not even virtually. But no, we are super pumped. This is the start of our weird Gen Con coverage of virtual Gen Con-ness. I don't know. It's a weird week. It's a weird week for everybody, I think, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would think a lot of people would say it's a weird year, and this week is just adding to that.
It's really driving home, like, how unusual this convention season is, yeah, I guess. Like, it's been so hard for me to get, like, amped up for a convention because I'm not packing a suitcase.
Yeah. Well, and normally today I would be flying. I actually would probably already be landing in Indianapolis right now. And I was telling my husband this weekend, it's really weird. I still have, because we're doing Gen Con online and we're doing a lot of promotion and stuff for it, I still have all of the like normal pre-show, oh my goodness, I have so much to do and balance and all this other stuff. But I don't have this added layer of like, I'm physically going someplace. And so I'm actually kind of bummed about that because I really do thrive on the mental change when I'm in a new environment, if that makes sense. Like, the only reason I ever go to Indianapolis is for Gen Con. So when I'm like, when I walk through that airport and pass like the race car that they have in the terminal, I'm like, sweet, we're Gen Con mode. Let's do this. Yeah. But I don't have that this year here. I'm just like walking the dogs around the neighborhood and I'm like, Gen Con mode.
Yeah, pretty much, pretty much. But even still, Haba did manage to drop some game release announcements this week.
Yeah, we did. We have more coming. That's the best part.
Oh.
Yes, we have one more announcement coming, and that one will be announced during the Haba, like, new and what's coming for 2020, and that's a panel/Twitch stream that'll be happening on Thursday at Gen Con Online. But we did announce yesterday our new versions of Animal Upon Animal. We have Animal Upon Animal Unicorns and Animal Upon Animal Dinos.
They are so cute.
I love them. I love them both. I want to play with them.
So I have what's called white box samples, which are the samples that like the manufacturer produces for us to be like yes or no on the manufacturing part. So I've had those for a while. And it's been really hard not to like share pictures of us playing with them because they're so fun and you can mix them together and we have a blast with them. But yesterday I did the announcement. I was doing a lot of like Twitter marketing, Facebook marketing on the announcement. And then like we open the front door and there's a huge box sitting on my front porch and I'm like, what, huh? And I open it and it's my like production copies of Animal Upon Animal Dinos and Animal Upon Unicorns. And I squealed. I was so excited. So, I haven't opened them yet. I'm going to do an unboxing stream sometime today, actually, to like just show off like the stuff. But I am so pumped. These have been in the works for a few years now, actually. And so we are super excited that Barnes & Noble was willing to partner with us to make these a reality. So, yeah.
So those are a timed exclusive with Barnes & Noble, is that true?
Yeah, so these are a Barnes & Noble exclusive for 6 months when Barnes & Noble releases them in their fall set, which last I heard the fall set was launching in September, but I don't know if that got pushed back because of the state of the world. I'm not really clear on that. But we are allowed to sell them at consumer shows and from hobbyusa.com. So Gen Con is still a consumer show, even if it's online. So we will be selling them this week and this weekend at Gen Con Online. I'm not sure if we'll actually have them available for sale on our website after Gen Con Online. It's kind of gray in the contract. We haven't gotten an official response from Barnes & Noble yet on if we're allowed to keep selling them after Gen Con Online or if we have to wait until Barnes & Noble actually, like, has them in their stores. So, we'll see.
Well, either way, we are super looking forward to seeing those new Animal Upon Animal sets in person. And honestly,
if I had a desk, I would buy one just as a desk toy. Because, I mean, I'm a stay-at-home mom, so like I don't really have workspace per se. I have a laptop that wanders around my bedroom and the rest of my house. But if I had a desk, it would be super cool.
I mean, that's basically what you've been on my desk, so I totally understand. Yeah.
Yes. Let's talk about some of the other stuff, though, that you sent out in a press release a couple of weeks ago. The first thing I'm going to have to ask you is how to say the name of this first one. It looks like Fiverr Findin.
Yep, Fiverr Findin.
Hey, I got it right. So Haba is dipping its toe into Rollin' Rights. I already had a chance to see color it when the Before You Play folks did a playthrough, Monique and Naveen. Mm-hmm. And that was super cool. And Color It is a roll and color game appropriate for really the whole family, like the little gamers all the way up. If you can follow some basic directions, you can play, and the little guys can just play and enjoy it and not be super competitive. And the adults can try to make the best choices and kill each other, honestly. Not kill each other, but, you know, outmaneuver. But Fiverr Findin' looks like a little bit closer to your typical roll and write. So can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, for sure. So Fiverr Findin' is more, like you said, kind of the traditional roll and write, the little bit older target audience. It's for 7 and up, 1 to 4 players. And in that one, what you're doing is each player will have their own dry erase board and marker. And there are 5 dice and there are 6 symbols. So 1 for each set of the die. The 6 symbols are colorblind friendly. So each symbol has a color associated with it and the symbol itself is unique. And what you'll do is you'll roll all 5 dice and then players will race to essentially, you're kind of racing, you're kind of not, but you're trying to find 5 unique shapes that don't overlap on your board that match the 5 dice that were rolled. So if you rolled, I don't know, 2 blue stars, an orange diamond, a purple circle, and then like a yellow diamond or whatever, you were trying to find shapes on your board that use all 5 of those dice. So you can't omit a dice. You can't do duplicates of a symbol unless there are, of course, duplicate dice that have rolled that. And so that's the challenge, is you're trying to be the first to get to 5 shapes, but the shapes that you draw are worth different point values. So some shapes are worth more points than other shapes. So that's why I was like, it's kind of a race, but it's kind of not. Like, the first person who gets 5 gets to flip the timer, and everyone else will have 30 seconds to find shapes. But you might not be the first to find 5. Maybe you only find 3 shapes. But if the 3 shapes that you find are worth more points than the person who found, you know, 5 shapes the fastest, you could still come out ahead on score. So
that's very cool.
Yeah. So you'll play around. That's 1 round. And then you'll record the scores. There's another board, dry erase board, for score recording. And then everyone will erase their boards. And then you start a new round. And when you do a new round, you roll the dice again. So you have a new set of symbols that you're looking for. And you just do that 5 times. So you're finding 5 shapes 5 times. And each shape has 5 squares in it. So that's why it's called Fiverr Findin.
I like that thematic use of the number 5.
Yeah. So that one is available at Gen Con. We're releasing it this week at Gen Con. We're super excited. It's $19.99 MSRP. And like I said, it works really well for 7 and up. Adults, I always like playing it with adults because you're always going to get frustrated at yourself. Those are my favorite games, when you get frustrated at yourself. You only have yourself to blame. It's also really great with kids because kids are like amazing at spatial reasoning stuff. And the really fun thing on that one is, just like with a lot of Haba games, you have a game where spatial reasoning and spatial pattern recognition is part of the game, and kids' brains just are good at that naturally. It's not a skill that you have to super develop. It's kind of a skill that as humans we develop when we're about 3 or 4 years old. So when you're playing with a 7-year-old, it might take them a second, right? But like adults will take just as long to kind of get onto the, you know, spatial train as the kids will. So it's a great game where you can have kids and adults playing at the same level and actually competing.
And you'll find all the adults who never quite develop their spatial reasoning skills.
Yes. Yes. This one's really funny because like my husband and I have very different spatial reasoning skills that we're good at. So if it's a tile placement game, where you're like placing polyominoes and you're trying to like fill a board, my husband will kick my butt. I will not play Miyabi with him anymore because he is way too, and I've played Miyabi hundreds of times at this point and he still kicks my butt. And I just don't get it. But Fiverr Find-In, because it's like quickly noticing patterns that are already there, I can do that one. I can kick his butt at that one. So
well, this gives me hope because I really enjoyed Miyabi, but I am terrible at it.
I'm pretty bad at it too.
Yeah.
You know, we're just not good at it as a family. I don't know. So, which is weird because I'm actually usually pretty okay with polyomino games.
I really liked it, but yeah. I'm also terrible at it. All right.
So let's talk about a kind of game that I'm really good at and I really like.
Yes, let's do that. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about Cloaked Cats? I saw that you're not you as the greater Haba community are running some sessions of Cloaked Cats for Gen Con.
Yeah, so Cloaked Cats is another one of the family strategy games where we're targeting a 7 years and older game. That one is for 2 to 4 players, and that is a logical deduction game with cats. So you are all cats at a masquerade ball, and you have, it's a masquerade ball, so obviously you are hiding your main identifying features, and you are trying to unmask your opponents slash the other attendees. And I had one reviewer, she described it as your bougie cats. They were like, you're bougie cats and you're criticizing other people's costumes, or you're like pointing out other people's costumes to try and make each other like be like, oh, well, I'm wearing that, or, you know, something like that. They were like,
that's awesome.
To it. Yeah. And I thought that was really funny, but it's kind of what you're doing because you're going to have 3 features which are in this like little fan. So it holds it up for you. So you don't have to constantly be like holding up and, you know, picking up and checking like, what is my feature again? So the fan's going to hold your hidden secret features. And on your turn, you're going to play a cat card, which is a card that is a picture of another cat that's attending this masquerade ball. And the cat has features on them that correspond to what all the possible features are that all of the players could have. So a player could be brown, or they could be yellow, they could be striped, they could be wearing a top hat, they could have a martini glass, things like that. So when I play that cat card out, everyone that has a feature in common, at least one feature in common with the card I played, will put one of their masks onto the cat card. So if I played like an orange cat that's leaping and wearing a top hat, if I was orange, if one of my features was orange, even though I played the card, I would still put one of my masks on the card, indicating to everyone that there's something on that card that matches what I have. And then someone else would do the same if they have something that matches. So Andrew, if you're wearing a top hat, right, you would put your mask onto the card to indicate that something on that card matches what you have. And then as the game progresses, you have more of these cats that are out that have masks from everybody, and you can look and logically deduce where there's similarities, like, oh, well, this cat has one of Andrew's masks and this cat has one of Andrew's masks. Is there anything between these two that is the same? Because there's a good chance that that's what Andrew is, right? So there's like some interesting logic stuff. I kind of call it like a 4-player guess who meets Sudoku in Cats.
Yeah, I totally get that vibe. It looks very cute and very approachable. Like, I was able to deduce about 90% of the gameplay by looking at the pictures that are on the Haba website.
That's meta deduction right there.
Ooh.
I'm still swooning over bougie cats myself.
I mean, bougie cats and deduction game, it makes this right up Andrew's alley.
I mean, look, every cat thinks that they're a bougie cat.
That's true.
Right, right. But this is, you know, a little
taken to the next level.
Yeah, next level.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. One last one in particular that I wanted to ask you about for our younger family gamers. I saw a picture of Barnyard Bunch, which I saw was a game for ages 4 and up. This is something about cooperating to keep animals on the farm. So I guess they're all trying to run away from the farm.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the fences on this farm, but needless to say, there's currently no fences. And I guess this farmer just every day just deals with this issue, which is the 8 animals that the farmer has on the farm. Every day they just try to make a break for it and they try to run away. So,
oh, no.
The farmer and his helpful dog and you will work every day to try and just keep the animals contained. So it's a cooperative game where you win and lose together. And it's a great introduction to cooperative games and also a great introduction to those kind of games where it's just you're trying to outlast a situation. So the game ends in a victory if you go through the deck of cards and no animal has run away. The game ends in a loss if one animal manages to make it off of the runway, basically, that they're on. So if an animal moves off of the board onto the table, they have successfully run away and everyone will lose. So I kind of like call it reverse tower defense. But what you do is on your turn, well, first you put every animal, they start in the center around the barn, and then there's basically like this colored wheel spoke coming out from the barn, and each animal will have a random board placed in front of it that has colored spaces. And on your turn, you roll a die. The die will have a color. Every animal standing on a colored space that matches what was rolled will make a break for it and run one space away. Then you flip the top card of the deck, and that will tell you to do an additional thing. Sometimes it's you lure a specific animal back. Sometimes a specific animal makes an extra run for it. Or sometimes you can use the farmer. It's the farmer that comes up, and so you get to pick one animal to move one space back. Or it's the dog that comes up, and the dog's, of course, the ultimate power card in this game. If you draw or roll the dog, because the dog and the farmer are both on the dice as well, with the dog, you get to pick one animal, and they have to go all the way back to the barn. So it doesn't matter how far away they've gotten.
Oh, what a good doggy.
Good pupper. Yeah.
The dog is the best. There's a dog on the cover, and I'm not going to say that was like 99% of my decision to bring this game over, but it was a big part of why this game brought over. Dogs on covers. That's the secret to winning my heart. But it is a great game for co-ops, and it's a great game for when you have a kiddo that has outgrown the My Very First Game series and those cooperative games, but they're not quite ready for the older cooperative games like Karuba Jr. or Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert, those kind of games. This is a great intermediate co-op game that helps get you to that next level while still working on core skills like colors, taking turns, working together, etc.
And I almost like as the game progresses, these pieces are moving farther apart from each other. And I know that with our kids, as games get more developed or intense or whatever you want to call it, they somehow lose their gross motor skills. So the fact that the pieces move away from each other makes it less likely that your kids are actually going to mess the board up, which actually turns out to be a good thing.
There you go. I didn't think about that. But yeah. Yeah. Because they get more nervous or excited. Yeah.
Yeah. They're so excited. Their hands are all over the place. I mean.
Well, like we've played Castle Panic with a 4 or 5 year old and it is doable, but I wouldn't recommend it in part because that like, oh no, all these things are near the tower. I'm going to grab this thing and knock over the entire castle.
Yeah, great. Absolutely. That's pretty much game night at the Smith family household. That's how it goes. But I mean, it's such a great classic Hobbit game with these big, adorable and yet still chunky wooden meeples of animals. This looks like just a ton of fun.
Yeah, and that one's a great one. And that one is $14.99. I realize I'm really bad about price stuff because we're not at a show and I'm not like holding the box. Barnyard Bunch is $14.99 MSRP. And that one is also releasing at Gen Con and available now. And it should be available at your friendly local game stores soon as well, if not already. And Cloak Cats, I didn't mention this. Cloak Cats is MSRP $19.99. And that one should be at your friendly local game store. That one's been out for a little while already this year.
Very cool.
And I will saddle Anitra with the responsibility of putting all of that in the post so that if you missed it, you can just head over to thefamilygamers.com, check out the posts, and all of those prices will be in there.
Awesome.
So, T, thank you so much for spending a couple minutes with us, talking about the great stuff that's coming out at Gen Con, sharing some fun secrets about what we may or may not find out at Gen Con in the next couple of days. So if anybody would like to ask you questions, where should they go?
Oh, man. So if Gen Con itself, if Gen Con Online is still happening, you can go to the HABA, quote, booth. You can find us in the exhibitor list on Gen Con. It's HABA USA, I believe is the name, if not HABA. And that will take you to a link to our website, which is HABAUSA.com/GenConOnline. And then in that website, there is a link to our Discord server, which is acting as our booth. So we have a Discord server floating. It's like a digital booth representation just floating in cyberspace. And you can go there and you can ask our staff any questions. We have demos running throughout the entire weekend. You can find those on the Gen Con listing. You can also just come in and say hi. Or if you're shopping and looking for specific age groups, we do have HAVA folks that are there and can help you kind of pick and choose or make recommendations for games for specific ages if you have any of those sort of questions. So yeah. Otherwise, if it's after Gen Con, you can reach us at HavaGamesUSA on Twitter, or you can reach me directly on Twitter at TheOneTar.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, T, for spending a couple minutes. I hope that you keep your voice all weekend long.
Me too.
And have a great night, will you?
Yeah. Oh, you too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
All right.
Hey, everybody, here we are in our weird virtual Gen Con coverage. This is just strange. I don't know what to call it. But we are with Jess Acetti from Funko Games. How are you doing, Jess?
Good.
And it's the beginning of Gen Con, so you still have your voice. So that's good.
Yes. Yeah.
And we're going to talk about some Funko Games. Funko has been, like, absolutely killing it. Pretty much, I don't know, you hit the ground running last year, you announced Funkoverse stuff, and those have been coming out, really just tons of great IPs there, and then a ton of amazing stuff this year as well. We got a couple things in from Funko earlier this week and a little bit last week, and I want to talk about some of those games too.
Yes.
So the first one I want to talk about is this game called Last Defense. So this is a real-time cooperative game where you're trying to save the world, but you're not a superhero. You want to talk a little bit about that, Jess?
Yeah, so Last Defense is a super high energy game where you're working together to save the city in 20 minutes or less. So it's really high energy, high intensity. We're really excited about it. And, you know, Rodney did a great how to play video and folks are really enjoying it.
Yeah, so this is a game where we downloaded this. It's got this iPad app that's always bringing in these like news reports of what's going on, and it basically tells you how to move things around on the board.
And you get to very satisfyingly tell the iPad app to pause. No, we defeated this creature.
And then you get cheers.
And,
yeah, who doesn't like cheers?
Which is pretty cool.
Yes, and if you win the game, I believe you also get a rainbow, which is nice.
We didn't get there.
We did not get there.
You will.
We were really, really, really close. Our six-year-old, we were playing with our six-year-old. There's basically no words in this game, no reading. So he was able to pick it up immediately.
Surprised.
That was awesome. But he kept getting distracted by the iPad. So we're like, dude, you need to roll your dice. Roll your dice.
Stop looking at the iPad.
But anybody out there, and I know most of our listeners have kids, you put a screen in the same room as a child and it is impossible to keep their attention. So
so he was trying and he'll get better at it.
He was. So yeah. Last Defense is available in stores pretty soon, right?
It's actually available now. You can purchase it through Funko Shop. You can purchase it at Walmart and on Amazon, and I'm assuming at your friendly local gaming shops as well.
Sweet.
So let's talk about some of the other games you have coming out too. The other one that our family has tried already is the Pop-Tarts game.
Yeah, this is also out. So this game is currently available to purchase at Funko Shop or on Amazon, and Walmart has this as well. I think multiple retailers have this. So it is available now.
All right, I have to admit, I have never eaten a frozen Pop-Tart before.
Oh, man, they're delicious, especially the chocolate ones.
So good.
Jess, are you team toaster or team freezer?
I'm somebody that generally likes to freeze things like grapes and blueberries and eat things cold because I think they make good snacks. But I have to say with Pop-Tarts, I am absolutely for toasted. I'm team toasted.
All right. Okay. Awesome. I feel like I have to be team toasted because it's either room temperature or toasted. It's the way that I've had Pop-Tarts.
I will freely admit that the few times I've had Pop-Tarts in the last 15 years has just been straight out of the package. Like no toasting, no freezing, no nothing.
It's like we don't have time for breakfast. Grab Pop-Tarts and get in the car.
Just put it in my mouth.
There is, that's where a lot of this game came from. So our development team is really into getting into the details of a particular IP and finding out. I think for this one, this is a bit of a quirk, right? We found out that there are people that argue that eating Pop-Tarts frozen is much better than toasted. And so we were fascinated by this debate and we created a game around it.
I think it's both kind of hilarious. One of the things that I love about Prospero Hall slash Funko in general is the attention to detail. Pop-Tarts is this tiny little box, but you open it up and of course the inside of the box is silver, metallic silver.
It looks like you opened a foil pack.
Just like a foil pack of Pop-Tarts. It just cracks me up. I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely now going to have to try some frozen Pop-Tarts like for science.
Yes. Right?
Like that's a requirement now. So I'm going to have to do that. But this is a really interesting tableau manipulation set collection game.
Yeah.
Yes. So we like to call it, we've coined the term conveyor drafting. So you have this set of cards in the middle and you're drafting them to benefit and score points. And what's better than a conveyor belt of Pop-Tarts coming out that you get to play with?
I think maybe a conveyor belt of sushi, but I'm going to say I still love the Pop-Tarts. So.
Right. I love a conveyor belt of sushi. It's true.
I know, right? Okay. So we went to New York Toy Fair with another site, with Engage Family Gaming. And one of the games that they got a chance to see was Pan Am. And they were just raving about this game, how it really kind of nails that golden age of travel feel. And it just, there were so many great plain minis in the box and all of this stuff. And we got a copy of it in, I don't know, a week and a half ago or something. We haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I absolutely opened it up and took a look. The game looks awesome. I love the board. I showed you this, Andrew.
Yes, you showed me the board.
Because the way the board shows the map of the world, it's actually from like kind of above the North Pole. So it's a completely different perspective than you're used to when you see a flattened out globe. Can you talk a little bit about the style of Pan Am and how that all came together?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love that you picked up on that because, again, we're all about the details. And Pan Am has all of these historically significant events that happen that actually impact the game. And in the game, you know, you're playing as a fledgling airline and you're really trying to draft off the success of Pan Am. It's inevitable that they're going to have their rise, right? So they're going to dominate, and you as an airline, you want to do the best that you can. And, you know, sell your stock at the right time, sell your routes at the right time. And it's just a really stunning, beautiful game. And we're super excited about it.
Yeah, it does. It looks fantastic.
Yeah. And, you know, what's really interesting. So the map is actually, you know, it depicts their flight routes at the time. And then also the events that happen throughout the game are historical events as well.
Very cool.
Mm. Yeah.
All right. So before we talk about the Disney stuff, because you guys are doing some amazing stuff with Disney, what's new in the Funkoverse? Because, I mean, we've got the Golden Girls is like amazing. We've got Golden Girls. We've got Harry Potter, Batman. When the Kool-Aid Man came out, I saw it at Unplugged and I was super excited. And then it got announced and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, like you're supposed to be. And then all the Jurassic Park stuff. So what's coming for the Funkoverse?
Well, you know, some other ones that are currently recent releases would be the Back to the Future 2-pack.
Right.
We have DC Comics 102. So we have a 2-pack that just came out with Wonder Woman and Cheetah. And the one that we're really excited about for specifically for Gen Con is the Game of Thrones 4-pack. So this introduces a whole new mode of play where, you know, you can basically have everybody competing against one another, which is pretty exciting. And yeah, this is, I think, if I were to mention, you know, something that would be a new Gen Con release for the Funkoverse, it would be Game of Thrones.
Sweet. That's awesome. Yeah, we're literally in the middle of writing our Funkoverse review right now. And we talked about all those different modes of play that are the four modes that are pretty much the same across all of the sets right now. And we kind of floated out there like, have you guys done a free for all back and forth with our other writer who's working on it? And just to hear that that's officially being released as a mode of play is pretty cool.
Yeah, we're really excited about it. It's really fun. I mean, obviously, it stays true to that Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually another one that we're excited about, this was previously released, but we're really excited about our Jaws 2-pack as well.
Yes.
And if you are lucky enough, there are chase editions where There is a Bloody Shark available. But that's really fun to play as well, because, you know, the shark kind of pops up randomly within the board. And it's a new way to play with your favorite characters.
Awesome.
Wow.
I love taking the systems and then putting some twist on it that changes everything and makes everything feel fresh. It's great.
Yeah, we're all about that. We really pride ourselves on the details, as I mentioned earlier. So, you know, every game that we create has unique twists or unique mechanics or is a unusual take on a license. Yeah, we're a bunch of pop culture geeks and we're making the games that we want to play.
Love it. I love it.
I love it. Well, speaking of pop culture, I think the time has come to talk about Disney. So let's talk about some of the stuff that you guys are coming out with either now or soon that you're allowed to talk about that uses your Disney intellectual property.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we are currently releasing is a game called Something Wild, and it's a fantastic family game. And we are releasing, it's a card game, and there are six different Something Wild sets that are currently available. So you have Villains, you have The Nightmare Before Christmas, Mickey and Friends, Toy Story, The Little Mermaid, and Aladdin. And, you know, this is just a really sweet card game where there is a minifigure included, and that minifigure is the wild card. So basically, when you have that minifigure of that character, you're able to activate your action cards that you have. So, you know, it's just kind of a very sweet, simple card game with a little bit of a twist and some strategy. But it is really, I think, more family strategy. It's a little bit lighter on the strategy, but really, really fun play. And we'll make sure that you guys get a couple copies as well.
Awesome. All right. So here's the I'm literally wearing a Donald Duck shirt right now. And Donald Duck is on the front of the Mickey's and Friends box. So I think I have to be Team Mickey and Friends on this one. What's your favorite, Jess?
You know, I am just a real sucker for villains. So you know, that's definitely my personal favorite set. The interesting thing about these, though, is you don't really have to just pick one because they are compatible as well. So you can.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, if you have a household where somebody is really a Toy Story fan and somebody else is a Mickey fan, you can't decide which one to play. You can actually play both decks in your game and they're compatible. So you can do this with up to three of them. And it gets even wilder when you do that.
What's your favorite, honey?
Oh, I think probably Toy Story would be the biggest hit in our house because that's the one we have watched those movies so many times and we would be quoting lines to each other. It's it is because they're good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. One more Disney thing that I want to ask you about, and that is this game that looks amazing. And I remember the ride at Disney World. It is The Haunted Mansion Call of the Spirits.
Oh, yeah. Super excited for this. So it is going to be releasing later in the year and we will be doling out additional details and sneak peeks on our social channels. If you follow Funko Games on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, you will start to see some sneak peeks coming out. And we're super excited about this game. You know, strategy game, really unique game mechanics, really honoring, obviously, the ride because our studio is filled with hardcore Disney fans. And this has basically been the dream to make this game. So stay tuned and there'll be more exciting things to come.
Okay, so I have to ask you a question. This is not Haunted Mansion trivia. I'm just asking your opinion. So here's my question. I have heard it said that in each of the parks, because I believe this ride is at both Disneyland and Disney World, that whenever they retire a ride, they take some part of that ride and put it in the Haunted Mansion because that ride is now dead. Do you think that's true?
Oh, that is really cool. I hope that's true. And actually, you know, I say I'm a fan, but I don't know this fact. I would hope that's true because we really love an Easter egg. We actually tried to do that in our games as well, where we have different Easter eggs and pay nods to things that we've created in the past. So I would imagine that to be true, but I can't confirm it.
All right. Well, you can go and ask all of the other people in the office what they think as well.
Yes.
Now you've got a little piece of like, cocktail party trivia.
Yeah, I bet there'll be people in the office that are bigger fans, you know, more hardcore fans than I am, that'll just be like, oh, yeah, obviously.
All right, we've only got a few minutes left. Is there anything else that you're really excited about?
Yeah, what's Funko doing at Gen Con this weekend?
So this weekend, you know, we have our shop, and the thing that is really exciting is our Back to the Future, Back in Time game has been out of stock, and we have some inventory in stock in our shop, in our Gen Con shop. So limited inventory there. Obviously, I think people will be really excited about that because there's some folks that have it on their wish list on BGG. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm generally excited about all the different games we have coming out. And there's some that are really unusual themes like Yacht Rock. I don't know if you guys have heard about our Yacht Rock party game.
We have a copy of Yacht Rock, but we can't have parties right now. So
that makes sense. Well, it is, you know, you can play it with each other at least. So we just have so many great games coming out, and they're of all different varieties. You know, there's strategy games, family games, party games, every kind of game you can possibly think of. And for us, you know, we just love playing them. We're here at home playing these games all the time, and we're just hoping that everybody else loves them as well.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely have to give Funko just a ton of credit, all the credit in the world, really, for releasing games that touch like everything. You've got co-ops, you've got strategy games, you've got simple set collection games, you've got, you know, more deep things like a game like Pan Am that's going to take 45 minutes, hour and a half to play. It's really all over the place. You're really covering basically every base I can imagine.
And all kinds of different themes, everything from, like we talked about, Jurassic Park and DC and Back to the Future to Pop-Tarts and Yacht Rock.
And 50-year-old airlines.
Yeah. We always like to surprise. That's our biggest thing, is the product we're developing now. I think we have some really exciting surprises for 2021 as well. And I just love when people are playing board games, because we love our industry. And, you know, the more people that are spending time together and with their families playing games, the better. So we'll keep making the games, assuming people keep playing them.
Well, that's our motto, too. So we love it. Absolutely. You mentioned your Twitter handle before for Funko. You want to just go through those one more time right before we wrap up?
Yep. So you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as at Funko Games.
Very cool. And since we're trying to push this interview out during Gen Con, is there somewhere people should go specifically to look for Funko during Gen Con?
Yeah, so during Gen Con, we do have our Gen Con shop, so you can find us there. And then also on Funko.com, we have all of our games available there as well.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Jess.
Yes, thank you very much, Jess. We really appreciate you taking some time to talk about all the great stuff that's coming out this year. I can't wait to hear more about the Haunted Mansion, I gotta admit.
Awesome, yeah. We're excited to tell you more about it, so thanks. Thanks, you guys, so much. We appreciate it.
All right, absolutely. Have a good day.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody, it is Andrew, and I am here with Nora from Game Ride. How are you?
Hey, good. I'm good. It's good to speak with you, Andrew. I feel like I wish I was seeing you in person at Gen Con, but it's
I know,
fun. And
I know.
We're doing it this way. I get to see and chat with folks and talk about our game. So, hey, I'm happy either way. I would be happier in Indianapolis, but I'm happy.
Right. I bet. I know. It's been a pretty wild year, really. The last 3 or 4 months have been totally nuts. And we are very thankful in the Family Gamers household that we grew our own gamers. So we still have a gaming group. A lot of our friends can't get together with the gaming groups. So that's been a small blessing for us, I guess. But
cool. Well, I have a 12-year-old, and apparently he no longer likes games. Just
what?
So I'm impressed that you grew ones that did not morph into something else. And I mean, well, he likes video games. He's just not playing board games with me at the moment. Maybe I'm just boring after.
No.
So I don't think I am.
Well, our oldest is 11, so maybe in 2 months when she turns 12, she suddenly will not do it.
It doesn't happen.
All right, so let's talk about some of the stuff you guys are doing at Gen Con. You guys have a very full schedule.
Thank you. I am so glad that you say that, because I don't know how to do this convention. It's like a brand new entity. And at first I was like, whoa, we have too much. And I was like, no, we have too little. It is feeling like probably the right amount, because I've been really busy. I think for myself, it feels really busy. So in that regard, I feel good about it. But I mean, the hustle to get all the images looking great and trying to make people excited about them, because we're trying to get their attention in the whole, there's a lot of stuff happening for Gen Con. So like, thank you. I take that very much to heart, because I have a big old Google Doc and some of the stuff got cut. And so, yeah. So thank you very much.
Well, I mean, I think that especially those of us who go to conventions, we're used to some amount of physical fatigue accompanying our mental fatigue. Yeah. And we're not running around like crazy. So like the physical fatigue isn't there, but we're still mentally, we have to be paying attention and on top of everything and doing all the mental stuff. And so that disconnect between being physically tired and being mentally exhausted is really, really weird.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I actually was just thinking about it the first night. I have like a little insomnia the first night before a show, because I'm in charge of the booth. I need everything to be perfect. And I thought, well, I'll never have that this year, because everything's going to be in my desktop. It's sitting in my living room. I'm fine. And then, of course, the night before the show, total anxiety. Oh, my God, did I forget to submit that event? Oh, my goodness. What if I don't have a game in my house? Do I have to go over to the office and grab it? Like, I thought I had everything. Like, all the same type of, am I prepared for the show thoughts happened. Mm-hmm. They were just a different variety. So, silly me for thinking I could get away with not being worried about how our booth looks.
Right. Yeah, it's just weird. I don't know. Everybody that we've talked to so far has been like, yeah, it's very strange. So, but let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on. So, hopefully this is going to get out on Saturday morning. That's the goal. So, what are Saturday and Sunday and I think also Monday looking like?
Saturday, we are going to have, so we made sure to have all our events in the afternoon so that folks who aren't on Eastern Daylight Time can show up for them. So starting at 1 tomorrow, our first event is meeting the inventor of Sleeping Queens, Miranda Everts. But that game was invented 15 years ago when she was a kid. She was like 7 years old. So it'll be an interesting conversation, one that I don't think a lot of people get an opportunity to hear about. First of all, being a child inventor. Secondly, what's it like to have it be a staple in people's households after 15 years? And like, is she even doing any more game design? Is she like many people who was really into board games when they were little and grew away from it and then comes back to it as an adult? So I think all of those will be really interesting things for folks to find out. And Sleeping Queens has such a great following with kids. So, like, I really hope a lot of families show up for that. And then at 2 o'clock, we're going to have on our YouTube channel, so Game Riot's YouTube channel, we're going to have a live Learn to Play of Dungeon Drop. And the Phase Shift guys, who we co-published it with, are showing up for that. So nice. That'll be a lot of fun. They're really enthusiastic folks, and I think they'll do a great job in helping people learn how to play that game. And then at 4, we have a Play It Live of Metro X, which is one of our releases this year, and that's on YouTube Live. And we've done some Facebook Live stuff with Metro X, and it's really fun. Like, you just go to our website, go to the Buzz section of the website, and you can print out the scorecard, and then you can play at home. One thing I would give as a tip is that you should use a color printer, because the scorecard is in color. And I actually just, like, we did it on Facebook on yesterday and Thursday, and some guy was like, I'm playing on, you know, super hard mode.
No.
Because,
yeah, oh, no. Oh,
no. Like, guess a lot of stuff. So that was interesting. And then at 5 o'clock tomorrow, we have Quicks the Card Game. We're going to do a playthrough on YouTube for that. So those are the events for tomorrow. And then Sunday at 1 o'clock, we're going to do an Abandon All Artichokes playthrough on YouTube. And then at 2 o'clock, we're going to do one for Splurt and Hit List, our two new party games. And then basically those were the rest of the events for Gen Con this year. But we do have something going on the entire weekend, and that is the Gen Con Game Right Cosplay Contest. So if you're so inspired, since you have a bunch of gamers in the house, you could have them dress up as something from one of our games. And then you can enter our contest via Instagram, and you just hashtag it with Game Right Cosplay. And so you could win. We're going to pick one random winner, and that winner gets a free game of their choice from our website. So those are the events for this show.
Awesome.
So we have, of course, so we caught up at New York Toy Fair earlier, right just before everything went crazy. And then we've had a chance this year to take a look at Abandoned All Artichokes, which we've told many funny stories about that game where our daughter was like, it's fine. And then she played it. And then it was like every 3 days was like, can we play it again? 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 So she totally fell in love with that game. We just released a review a couple of weeks ago for Marshmallow Test, which we love as well. We have a copy of Dungeon Drop. We haven't broken that out as many times as I would like so far, but we did get a pizza box. I was told that a pizza box is the perfect size to keep everything.
Oh, nice. I hadn't heard that's brilliant. Yeah.
We got an unused pizza box from our local pizza place so that the next time we play, we're not trying to keep the pieces from the cats.
Yeah.
And gosh, so what else is coming out this year? So I know at one point Shifting Stones was planned for this year. I don't know what's going on.
Shifting Stones is still coming out this year. And in fact, it's the only release that's not available yet in 2020. And it's going to be shipping at the end of February is the thought. It came out beautifully, and I'm so excited for this game. So it should be available on our website. We'll probably try to send a lot out to reviewers so that people can get an idea of what the game is about. I love it. It's some spatial stuff, so I like looking for those things. So that's our only release left for the year, and I'm kind of glad we were early for us this year. All of our releases, with the exception of Abandoned All Artichokes, which was available for pre-sale but almost available for PAX East, and we could play it then. Everything was out before PAX East, and we were able to attend PAX East, and so that was really nice. It was nice to not have something we were holding for Gen Con, which I guess Shifting Stones would have been it, but in that regard, I think we did okay. our thought, though, is that some of these stuff, things like Dungeon Drop and Metro X and Abandoned All Artichokes, will probably have a second life the next time we're able to play in person, especially Dungeon Drop. It really does its service to get to really see how it moves. So hopefully we're doing a good job of that on YouTube, but it's always better in person. So yeah.
Yeah, of course, we go to Boston Fig every year, and we see you at Boston Fig every year. And last year at Boston Fig, the designer of Shifting Stones was there and was showing it. And so I actually got a chance to sit down and play it. And for anyone who's listening, basically this game is those puzzles where you have one empty spot and you have to move things around to make a picture, only you're trying to match different goals the whole time. And so there's a little bit more going on. It's a little bit more dynamic than that. I agree with you. It was beautiful even in its prototype form. And I'm really, really excited to see what that looks like finished.
Yeah, what Andrew said, that's a good description of the game. We didn't stray too far from the prototype, so I think you'll be pleased. So, and the artwork's beautiful, and for me, it was one of the games I enjoy playing a lot, so I was hoping it would be out for Gen Con, because I spent 4 days playing the same game over and over again, so I was crossing my fingers it would be Shifting Stones, but I would have been happy also with a little bit more Metro X.
Right.
Dungeon Drop too. So, and then also this year we released Quicks the Card Game, Marshmallow Test, which is this cool little trick-taking game, and Hilo Flip, which are all a lot of fun too. So especially for the family. Well, you tried out Marshmallow Test, so you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting how it's an incredibly straightforward trick-taking game. And yet, because of that whole delayed gratification thing that you have to do, it really, I'll say, stretched our kids. And honestly, got them ready to play The Crew, which we just picked up.
Oh, I love The Crew. It's so fun. It's so good. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like that, we were thinking about that. We're like, oh, The Crew is such a solid game. It's bravo. And is there room for two trick-taking games? So, we're always saying, is there room for this type of game? And there's so many games out there. And so I'm really happy to hear that for your family, it was a way to prepare them to move on to the next level of trick taking. So yeah, I mean, it's funny because I always think of trick taking is so competitive. The Crew really flipped it on its head. So
yeah. Well, it's funny. I kind of called it like the spring training of trick taking games because you're doing completely different things. So like you think in a spring training game, it's like, you know, what's happening is you're working on the craft of what you're doing before you get to like the official season. And it's something like The Crew. It's like, okay, well, I know the general premise of what's going on as a trick taking game, but I have to think about everything completely differently. And I have to do things very, very differently. And I don't think that you can approach a trick taking game like that unless you have a good foundation of what a trick taking game is. And so with our kids, if they had never played a trick-taking game and then went directly to The Crew, it would have been a disaster. And so I'm really, really glad that we had something like Marshmallow Test, which allowed them to understand what a trick-taking game was. Because I think adults, like, we play trick-taking games for 30 years, and so we just kind of know how they work. It's like parallel parking. You just know how to do it.
You don't need the trick part explained.
Right, exactly.
Like, okay, you hear trick taking and that eliminates half the directions. And so that's not the case for kids.
Right. Because they have no idea. They have no basis. They have no foundation. And so I'm really, really glad that it worked out for our family that marshmallow tests came first, because it's changing some things, but it's not changing the core of what a trick taking game is. Gotcha. So.
Cool.
Does that make sense?
Awesome. I love hearing that. That's what we wanted it to be, but you never know until it gets out there how
that's true.
So like, that's exactly, and you know, the funny thing about it, because the marshmallows are kind of useful and kid-like, I think it's a super solid game to play with my adult friends. So like, in that regard, I encourage anyone who encounters it to not think it's necessarily a kid's game, because it is a solid trick-taking game, and it's a five-player. So there's some like really nice little elements of it, and you wouldn't even need the marshmallow theme on top to enjoy
right,
it.
Right, yeah, we did have to stop our kids from flicking the marshmallows at each other. Yeah, but I feel like adults would do that. Well, because we have cats that like to eat things.
Okay. Hence the pizza box.
Exactly. See, yeah, there you go. So, yeah. All right. Well, if people do want to get a hold of Game Right, especially this weekend or even going into the fall season, where is the best place for them to do that online?
Okay. So definitely follow us on Instagram. That's my pet project. So I'm always eager. You know, we really are interactive there. And so if you want to be part of our community, that's a great place. Facebook, obviously, as well. Additionally, we are very interactive there and like have a lot of announcements that we put out through both of those social media channels. Our big goal for this year is to grow the YouTube channel. So I think you'll see some more exciting stuff from us over on YouTube and then Twitter. I mean, it's really all the social media feeds.
Right.
That's where we're relying really heavy on that. We are looking into, now that we've kind of tested the waters with Gen Con Online, like what other online spaces are we going to be able to do stuff in? But we're still waiting on doing a lot of digital versions of our board games. That's like, we're really a board game company, so we're hesitant to move over to that. But I know that that's what people are looking for, too. There's a lot of people doing some fun stuff with Quicks, playing on virtual game nights with on Zoom, and like that game lends itself really well. All of our port-a-party games are great games to play on Zoom or with friends who are at a distance. So those would be my suggestions for people looking for some fun ideas that they can translate into like a socially distanced experience.
Yeah, and I think that what everybody's doing really with Gen Con is showing how you can play all these games virtually. So that's been super sure. helpful as well.
And I think it's interesting because we're switching a little bit to, I mean, I'm missing playing the games with people who are teaching. Like, that's a valuable thing you walk home with is, okay, if I didn't learn it at Gen Con, like, I now have to purchase it and learn it without that little bit of information. But I think we're all getting better at it as publishers on how to make sure that we're really clear with the way we present it through video. And I've never watched so much game content without playing. Like, usually I'm like, okay, let's just get it and play it, you know? And
yeah.
So this is a really different experience to just be observing and observing. We may find out we all come out a lot more educated on our games. We'll see.
Hey, maybe so, yeah.
There could be a silver lining. You don't know.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Nora, for spending a couple of minutes. I hope your Gen Con continues to go great and you don't have too much mental stress over the next couple of days.
I hope you have a good couple of days, too. And thank you for inviting me on. I'm always happy to speak with you.
All right, it's so good to see you. All right, take care.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, here we are with Rory O'Connor on, I guess this is the third day of Gen Con now. I don't know, it feels weird because I took my son to a baseball game this morning.
Yeah. Did, but we've now done a bunch of interviews and we've air quote gone to a bunch of panels. I think our daughter is in the middle of watching a panel upstairs. So yeah, it is more or less the third day of Gen Con. You can hear the crowd noise in the background or just thumping 6-year-old feet above our heads, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're here with Rory. How you doing, Rory? How you been?
Hi guys. I'm good actually. And it's actually great getting to connect with people through games. I was actually just having a conversation with my colleague and co-designer Michael Fox, and we were just saying how Gen Con is actually just a big excuse for gamers to socialize with each other because of on all of our demo sessions people just want to talk to each other about games.
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean, everybody I think is feeling the strain of a lack of social engagement, even if they don't really think of themselves as social people. That's where we're at right now. So yeah, let's talk about a couple of games. So we just got a demo of Prisma Arena on Tabletopia. So that's a thing. Prisma Arena is on Tabletopia.
Yes, it's currently on a private listing and I'm just working on getting that. It needs to go through a review process and we'll be making that available in August is the plan in the run up to the game's release towards the end of September.
Awesome.
Very cool.
So we were just talking a little bit about Prisma Arena. This is a game that didn't end up going through Kickstarter officially, and this is a game that is coming directly to retail. So do you want to talk a little bit about the game and what people can be expecting in a couple of months?
Yeah, so essentially we wanted to create an arena combat game for a new generation. Myself and John Fury, my co-designer, we worked together on Untold together as well. We both love arena games, but found that they kind of become a little complicated or quite dark in tone. But we love the spatial aspect and almost like the chess-like aspect of gameplay that you can have in it. So we stripped the game right down to a very simple rule set that was easy for anybody to teach. So in the game, you're a young novice who's been recruited to train and become a guardian of hope in a time of despair. So the kind of setting is quite fitting, given the world we're in at the moment, because your goal is to fight for hope. And the whole conceit is, you know, you don't sit around and wait for things to happen. You kind of take action. You train alongside Mokon, which are kind of cute Pokemon-esque creatures that embody different emotions like anger and happiness and jealousy. And the idea being that they buff your hero, but you got to learn how to work with those emotions and get the most out of them. So we kind of, people really like that aspect. How do you use anger in a way that's effective for you? And how can jealousy actually have a positive component to it as well? And the game is really simple. You're basically moving, striking, and blasting in the arena and trying to score 20 points. The characters don't die. It's more like laser combat or laser tag. When you receive a number of hits equal to your hit level, you get temporarily bounced from the arena and you have to reset and come barging back in. So we wanted to create a real kind of cartoon vibe to it. And aesthetically, a lot of people compare it to like Steven Universe with bits of Avatar The Last Airbender as well in terms of the kind of the tone of the game.
Yeah, we were playing it. We were talking a little bit about strategy. And if you tuck yourself around this corner, you're going to avoid being in range of that other character and all these things. And it really reminded me of the dungeon crawl aspect of combat in a role-playing game, but without the heaviness of that darker kind of environment. So pretty much exactly what you said. But it really was striking all those notes with me where I felt like I could really strategize and figure out the best way to get all of my cards to combo together or not combo together, or in my case, you know, not at all look at the fact that I need to combo cards together and just do a terrible job. But really felt deeply strategic, even though the game was light enough for, I mean, at the time, I think back at PAX, our 9-year-old played. Oh, I was 8 at the time.
Yes, he was 8 then.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, we kept taking away rules and seeing if they hurt the game in any way. So we basically pared it back to the minimum you need, and then you can layer complexity in later as the characters level up. But we pride ourselves on the fact that it takes maximum 2 rounds for players to learn how to play this game and start strategizing the way you were doing. And that's because of the simplicity of the rule set quickly allows you to start thinking tactically on the board. And that, you know, positioning is key to staying on the board long enough to deal a hit to your opponent before they get to do it to you.
Yeah, I love the friendly nature of the combat, which we kind of mentioned already. I mean, well, no, but like my kids will play games in the yard where they're pretending to kill each other, but then miraculously somehow they always come back. So it actually makes me think of that a little bit. It's not, you know, you're not killing each other. You're just knocking each other out.
I actually think the laser tag analogy is a fantastic one. I didn't really think of it in that way as we were playing. But as soon as you said it, I was like, yeah, we put up barriers to block ourselves. And then if we get knocked out, we just start over. And that really hits the nail on the head in terms of how cyclical the combat feels in this game. And I like that a lot.
And so kind of conceptually within the game, the idea is that you're channeling Prisma, which is your inner light, and you're blasting each other with it. But essentially, it doesn't do you any harm. It's there to drive back despair, you know, and it doesn't kill despair either. It just kind of holds it back long enough. And that's why you're training to become guardians. A really interesting thing that informed the whole feel of the game was a conversation with my daughter. She was 10 at the time, and I was explaining to her the game and how, you know, when you're fighting against each other, and when you die, you get taken out of the arena. And she said, oh, so it's like you're not trying to kill each other, but by fighting against each other, you're trying to make each other better, because there's this whole kind of training aspect to the game. And I just thought, you know, no normal kind of like combat oriented game designer is going to think like that, this idea of helping each other get better. And I just said, okay, everything in this game is going to revolve around that aspect, you know, because the only way you can level up is by playing against somebody else. So it's like, it doesn't matter if you lose or not, you still get the training points to allow you to progress and get better. And people love that aspect of it, especially people who aren't normally into the kind of, you know, kill your opponent gameplay. This has all the cool stuff of those arena or kind of skirmish games, but takes away that kind of baggage of, you know, killing or succeeding at your opponent's expense. It's more like a dojo that you're training in and helping each other to improve as you play against each other.
Right. And the idea being that everybody gets better as you play and practice against each other. Can you tell us a little bit about the leveling up, the sorts of options that get to be available to players?
Sure. So on the back of each character card, there's a set of Prisma points, and there's basically four levels you can progress through in the game. Every time you play a game, you earn 2 Prisma points. If you score over the target number, which is 20 points, you also get a point. So even if you lose and you get over 20 points, you get that extra training point. When you fill up a column, which is, I think, 8 points, you level up in your Prisma level. When you do that, you unlock Prisma powers. So you'll start to gain these Prisma powers from the center of the board when you spar. And they're going to allow you to kind of customize your character with unique powers that the other characters won't have access to as well. And they're going to be things like every time you blast, you can move an opponent one space towards you. It could increase your movement. It could increase your blast range. It might allow you to return to the arena adjacent to a Mokon character. So we tried to make use of all the different aspects of the game. And that's just kind of one part of the customization aspect of the characters. They all start the same at the beginning, and you get to kind of tune your character's appearance, first of all, through removable stickers, which you don't get to do in Tabletopia, but in the physical game, you'll be able to do that. But also, as you level up, you'll unlock uniforms that you can attach to your character to signify what level they're on. So the idea is that, you know, when you sit down to face each other on the board, just by looking at the character, you'll know what level they are by the uniform that they're wearing as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's very cool. It's definitely the kind of thing that will get all of our kids really excited, because not all of them really like the beat each other down kind of gameplay. But the ones who don't will still be willing to sit down and play with brothers or sisters in order to get points, level up, get new stuff.
It's really satisfying. I mean, it's been kind of incredible, the range of people who've responded to Prisma Arena, because at first glance, you might think, oh, this is like a kid's game, but it absolutely isn't. It's designed to be accessible for younger players. But as you play it, you get to kind of reveal all of this depth to the gameplay. So we have kind of players in our community who are quite competitive gamers. They play a lot of TCGs. And they actually really enjoy the gameplay and the comboing that happens in Prisma Arena, because the heart of the game is the combo cards, which you both were using incredibly well as you were playing today.
After round one.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's why I said before how deeply strategic this game feels, because I really was brought back to those times when, you know, we would sit hunched around a table with a hex sheet or whatever for 6 hours doing some kind of ridiculous dungeon crawl. But we were able today to, you know, drop in and play the game for an hour and really get a lot of that same feel without that level of commitment that I no longer can put into a game that I could in college, because we're not that busy when we're in college, even if we think we are. Mm. And I really appreciated that, because being able to get into it quickly and hit all those notes that are the pleasurable notes as a deeper gamer in a package that I can also play with my kids, or I can play with a less intense gamer, is pretty cool.
You like, you've totally nailed it on the head. So just a quick funny story. John Fiore, who I worked with on the game, he had done a lot of work for HeroClix in the past, doing balancing of the character abilities. And he had a story about his partner agreeing to play any game with him one night. And he got really excited about playing HeroClix. And he opened his cupboard, looked at all the figures and thought, I can't take this out. You know, she'll never play another game with me again. And I'd been lamenting the same thing of, you know, games had gotten kind of dark or overly complicated, where they didn't match the aesthetic. And so we said, okay, let's create a game that children can enjoy playing together, parents and children can enjoy playing together, like a whole family, but also a parent can enjoy playing with, you know, another adult and play it on a deeper level with those Prisma powers. So I'm really happy to hear you kind of reflect that back, because it means we've kind of achieved, you know, what we set out to do.
Well, it's really important to not only recognize games that you like, but the mechanics that you like in games. And, you know, we talk about this on our show all the time. There are many games on our shelf that I love that I literally have no idea when I'll ever play them again. I mean, the classic example is Zulkin, right? Like, I have no idea when I'm ever going to get this game to the table. Like, it's just... But Prisma Arena is light enough that I can get it to the table and I can play it with probably not our six-year-old. He's not a full reader yet, so that's kind of you need to be able to read at least to some degree in this game. Although I suppose you could play it with no combos and no powers, but that would make it, you know, just to get the foundation.
Yeah.
Game.
Yeah,
but maybe. So probably not him, but our 9-year-old and our 12-year-old could easily pick this up and play it and have fun and enjoy what they're doing. Mm. So yeah, we're really excited for Prisma Arena. It looks really, really good.
Well, I'm looking forward to sending you a physical copy so you can actually go through the process of leveling up the characters. And when you start gaining those powers and thinking, okay, I'm facing Anitra in this battle, I'm going to equip these powers, because you get to choose for each match which of your power set do you want to actually equip for that game. So you'll basically change them according to who you're sparring with. Or, you know, we noticed in development that certain powers were much more useful in a 2-player game than they were in a 3 or 4-player game. So you'll change the powers that you bring. And that's kind of satisfying, where I wanted a bit of that kind of almost like deck building or customization, but not where it overtook the actual gameplay. That was really important to me, because I think, like you, a parent, I want to be able to sit down and play a game without having to spend hours in between actually preparing to play that game as well.
And I will point out that Anitra took much glee in destroying our 8-year-old when she played this against him at PAX last year. And I'm certain that he's got revenge broiling underneath his calm demeanor.
The fact that he has beat me, I think, every time I've played him in Unmatched has helped.
Yeah, probably. But not until you sit down in the Prisma Battle Arena once more will his wrath be fully assuaged.
I actually found it hilarious about how it was like you were teaching him a life lesson, Anitra. You're like, he's gonna learn.
Like, no mercy.
Oh, we're gonna do this and we're gonna do this, and then, oh look, I can combo here and here and here. And he's like, wait, what?
It's just like the 10-second slow-mo watch a child's joy fade to misery.
He had a good time.
He had a really good time with it. He did. And you told me all about it afterwards. It was pretty funny.
Well, it gives you those stories to tell. And I think that's what's key. You know, when I think you took out two characters at once, and that's like, whenever I talk to people, that's the highlight of the game. If they can take out two characters in one activation, they're like, okay, I don't care if I lose after this. Yeah. I got to do that.
You won that battle. Who cares about the war kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about another game that has just come out from Hub Games, which is Adventure Mart, which is another super adorable game. We sat down and we played a couple rounds of Adventure Mart. We have a physical copy of this. So this is a game that is, I think, available now. And we played a little bit of this earlier today.
Yes.
I love the conceit of this game. You want to talk about Adventure Mart for a little bit?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, I love the conceit as well. The game is by a design team in Scotland called DigiSprite. And I spotted it at UK Games Expo last year. And I immediately fell in love with this very modern, you know, 7-Eleven style store setting mixed with this super cute fantasy anthropomorphic characterization as well. I just thought it was hilarious, that idea of, you know, an adventurer rushing in to buy like a kind of, you know, a fantasy soda before rushing off to a battle. In the game, you're basically the manager of a Adventure Mart that's popped up kind of facing your opponents as well. So it's, the idea is like you're on the same street and you're serving the same customers, but you're trying to win them over. You've basically 5 days to earn as much money for your draconic overlords or risk being sent to the abyss for further training, as they like to call it. So the game is, it's really interesting hearing feedback. So we would call it like a deck builder with an auction element to it. But the deck building aspect, there's a few different twists to it. You're building up a store by buying stock. And the first twist on normal deck builders is that the stock comes into your hand ready for you to use immediately that day. You can also acquire fixtures and staff, which are going to you add to your store face up and they stay permanently in play until they're used, at which point they're either flipped over or they disappear to the abyss, which is the case of some of the staff.
Man, I am glad that I've never disappeared into the abyss after a bad day at work. But
so you basically, the options in the game are you can buy things to improve your store. You can use the effects on cards to get kind of benefits, or you can sell. And at some point, you're going to have to start selling stock to make money to buy more stock. And so when you reveal a customer, it starts a kind of mini bidding war where you start offering items to the customer based on symbols of the types of items they're looking for. And there's three different types in the game. There's magical, martial, and exotic. And basically, you're trying to outbid each other in the round. And the last person who's left standing wins the customer, manages to sell their items to the customer. The twist is that the customer only has a certain amount of money in their pocket. So you got to kind of weigh up, do I want to throw all of these items just to win the customer, even though I'm not going to maximize the money from them? And at the same time, you're using your staff and your fixtures to try and outmaneuver your opponent so that you can win the customer as well. So there's lots of really interesting choices in the game. It's, you know, for me, it's really interactive because I'm constantly watching what the other players are doing because I need to know when it comes to selling what it is I'm up against with the opponents. And each of the five rounds opens with a new event. So it's like a memo from AdventureMart HQ, and it's going to change the gameplay a little bit as well. So for me, it's one of those games where it looks beautiful on the table. It's intuitive in terms of like why you do all the things you do. And again, the feedback from players is that it's quite easy to teach to people because it intuitively makes sense what you're doing. And I just love that it's got the right level of take that as part of that gameplay as well.
Yeah, I think that there's a fair amount of glossary understanding in this game, which does make it a little bit more complex when working with kids. But there's so much flexibility, I think, to this that this is we talk a lot about rule shifting to make things more approachable at different age levels. And I think there's a lot of opportunity with a game like AdventureMart to rule shift. Maybe, you know what, we're going to play without staff or without fixtures because they're a little bit more complicated. And then you can streamline the game a little bit and really drop that age from like 10 plus, which is what it is, down to like a 6 plus or an 8 plus or something like that.
I mean, I think the nature of the gameplay and the kind of gazumping that goes on is, I think, challenging for a 6-year-old to handle. But we do have a recommended, so there's basically a star on some of the cards, and that's like your starting set. So that takes out most of the kind of complex cards in the game and helps you kind of get into it without a lot of the take that aspect of the gameplay. So we're very mindful of that. And it was one of those challenges in working on the game of how to kind of find that balance. We'd consider it kind of family plus. If someone's used to playing Dominion or basic deck builders, they'll have no problem with this. The first game, maybe for someone who hasn't played a deck builder before, yes, there'll be words and glossary they'll have to get their heads around. But we really tried hard to streamline all of that as much as possible for the first time player.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree 100% that it's very intuitive. Once you kind of figure out how it all works, it all absolutely makes a ton of sense.
It begins to all fall together. Yeah.
And one thing that I want to point out, because I think it's great, is even though the game has a fair amount of take that in it, of take that component, it's not really aggressive. It's because it's not a combat game. So you're not really attacking each other. You're just jockeying for being in a better position for a third party for the most part. There's a little bit of like have your opponent discard and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's really me. I want your business.
Exactly. It's really more about focusing on that third party and not necessarily on direct antagonism.
Yeah, and even the take that stuff, you kind of broadcast it to your opponent because a lot of it comes from like the fixtures and the staff. And they're visible face up on the board all of the time. So it's not like you don't have fair warning that it could happen. And when we play, we use a lot of them as this kind of like nuclear threat. It's like we may or may not use it, but it gets your opponent thinking twice about doing something as well. And that's the bit that we kind of really like within it. And we've also built in a lot of catch up mechanisms in it to make sure everyone stays in the game right up until the end as well.
It's like the Dungeoneering 7-Eleven Cold War.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked about AdventureMart and Prismarina, both of them just really super fun, awesome games. What else is coming from Hub Games?
Well, I mean, I kind of feel like I still need to give a shout out for Mega City Oceania and Flip Over Frog because they were just gathering steam when COVID-19 hit. So we never really got to show them at cons. You know, PAX was our first US one before COVID hit. So they're still out there, and both of them are incredible games. Coming in 2021, we've one game, because we're really going to be focusing on Prismarina and Adventure Mart next year. We've a game which I'm not going to say much about. It's the spiritual successor to Flip Over Frog, and it is combo-tastic. if you enjoy playing any kind of TCG or LCG and you want a fast playing game that gives you all the best bits of comboing with like no downtime and plays in about 30 to 40 minutes, you will love this game. I fell in love with it when I was shown it. It's by a Slovakian designer, and we snapped it up immediately when we saw it. We just kept playing it, and we've basically, during the kind of lockdown, we've been working on the artwork and we've got it all ready, and I'm just waiting for the factory samples to come back for us to prove it, and probably at Essen we'll start talking about it.
Virtual Essen?
Yes, virtual Essen.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it's actually already on Tabletopia because we were doing playtesting with it there, so it's in one of our secret rooms.
Ooh, so secret room.
Maybe I'll show it to you off audio.
Well, consider us interested. But for people who do want to find out more maybe about Prismarina or Adventure Mart, where can people find you online?
So pretty much across Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. There's also kind of on YouTube. We're there as We Are Hub Games on most of those channels. And then you can also find me on Twitter as straight up Rory O'Connor as well.
Well, we love following you on social media and seeing all the great stuff that you and your team come up with. Thank you very much for taking time to talk to us today, Rory.
It's been a pleasure. I'm actually going to run now and run a demo of Adventure Mart on Tabletopia for our next Gen Con group.
Well, I always look forward to chances to talk to you and work with you on the stuff that's coming out. You mentioned Mega City. Our review for Mega City is coming out very soon as well. It is truly a pleasure to talk to you every time we get the chance, Rory. So thanks for coming on.
I love your passion as well. I'll talk to you soon.
Right. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
All right. And that is our Gen Con interviews for 2020. Head on over to thefamilygamers.com to find all the ways that you can get a hold of us or how you can get a hold of any of the people that we interview. That's going to be it for us this week.
Until next week, play games with your kids.